The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield, your number one news and talk station.
The Money Show brought to you by Old Mutual. Do great things. Welcome to The Money Show. I'm going to talk to the guy in charge of the country's inflation in just a moment. Well, he's not in charge of inflation. If he was, he could do something about it. He's actually in charge of price statistics at Statistics South Africa. Try and say that after a Friday evening drink, which fortunately I've not yet had. But Patrick Kelly is the guy who is in charge of deciding what goes into the inflation basket, what comes out of it. And there's some really funny things which until recently have been in the inflation basket, which are leaving it. Recordable CDs were in the inflation basket. I found a box of these things as I was cleaning out my house the other day. I was like, those are worthless. You could turn them into coasters, perhaps. Those things were in the inflation basket. They're gone, along with a couple of other things. We'll catch up with Patrick Kelly in just a moment. We'll talk to tonight's market commentator, Gary McNamara, about the disappointing U.S. growth number, which came out in the fourth quarter. We'll talk about a horrible trading update out of Liberty Group today, which sent that share price plummeting in double-digit terms and dragged the rest of the financial sector down along with it. Best bits of the Money Show from the week. We've chosen just a couple. We can't do everything, otherwise we'd need 8 hours, because we think the best bits are about 8 hours long, Monday to Thursday. And we've only got a little bit of time on a Friday, so we have to choose the best bits. But if you want to hear them, of course, you can download our podcast and you can listen to the podcast and you can share it with your friends, which is nice. And we'll finish the week, as we always do on a Friday, with the brutal biz quiz. And it is
The Money Show,
your number one news and talk station.
Welcome to The Money Show this evening. What's the old saying? You can make some of the people happy some of the time. You can't make everyone happy all of the time. It's something like that. That's true for inflation data. It's always contentious. Last year, we saw the highest annual average inflation since the financial crisis. And we saw inflation last year average 6.4%. So that's pretty high, and we had an ugly December number as well. Stats SA measures the prices of hundreds of products and services across the country every month to see how much prices are rising and in some places declining. They put them all into a computer and it spits out an average. The man in charge of that process, far more complex, I'm sure, Patrick Kelly, head of price statistics at Statistics South Africa. 10 years ago, you wouldn't have included the price of a smartphone in the inflation rate. You wouldn't have included the price of electricity. It was, maybe you did, but it was less important, a less important component than it is today. Just two things that show, I suppose, how flexible the inflation basket does need to be as our lives evolve and as technology evolves and as some prices go up more than others.
That's right, Bruce. It's important, as it's the consumer price index, that the list of products does reflect the products that consumers are buying. I'm surprised you didn't mention stamps as one of the items that's going out of the basket. Not something that people are doing often.
No, exactly. I mean, stamps are quite interesting because, I mean, recordable CDs, and I found that unused box, tennis balls and stamps were the three that jumped out at me as being really odd. Stamps I get. Nobody wants to use the post office now, despite Mark Barnes' best efforts. And besides, email and couriers have taken over that business. But tennis balls? I mean, is it such a dramatic change in lifestyle that fewer people have got tennis courts, fewer people have got time to go and sit at a tennis club on a Saturday afternoon and hit little yellow fluffy balls around, that you've removed it from the
basket? And we've replaced it with soccer balls, which probably soccer is a more widely played sport in the country. I think that certainly the types of products that come in and out of the basket do reflect the changing lifestyles of people. And we see in the food category, for example, convenience foods coming in quite strongly, such as instant noodles or frozen pizzas and ready-mixed flour. So that does reflect a certain consumer trend. There are changes at kind of, let's say, the lower end of the market. So we have chicken giblets or lamb and beef offal and corned beef also coming into the basket, which probably are popular in different segments to the convenience foods.
Until now, a category like beef you've had is just beef. But actually, it contains everything from offal to fillet steak and everything in between. And those different parts of the animal will rise at different rates at different times. And therefore, it makes sense, I think, to slice and dice, so to speak, the meat component.
That's correct. So beef is one of those where we've split it into four: mince, string beef, steak, and offal. Another interesting one and quite topical at the moment are frozen chicken portions, where the poultry industry is complaining about what's known as individually quick frozen or IQF chicken portions coming in very cheaply from other countries. And we'll now be tracking specifically the IQF and the non-IQF chicken portion, that I think that will assist the policy discussion.
Now, when it comes to constructing a basket like this, there were 396 consumer items in the basket. You've now upped that to 412. The idea is that you go to how many hundred places every single month, and how many hundred people participate in the process of measuring the prices of all of these products?
Yeah, we have about 100 field workers and then approximately another 50 people back in head office at Pretoria. We survey approximately 2,000 shops every month, and there are about 70,000 prices that go into the calculation on a monthly basis. So the 412 products, though, that's at a national level, and there would be a weight for those for each province. And that's spread across not just items in stores, but also a whole range of services. Bruce, maybe one of the items to point out, as we were talking about new products, is that we'll be including levies for sectional title property for the first time. So this is part of the category of housing, goes along with water and municipal rates, and in fact will have quite a significant weight, about 0.8%, which is about the same as hot beverages.
Now, sectional title levies is something which is brand new. You're putting in car washes, and you're putting in video games for the first time as well. It tells, and by taking out tennis balls and putting in soccer balls, it tells you a lot about the way in which life in South Africa is changing.
Yes, it does. And I think that's not just the types of products that people buy, but also the amount of money that they're spending on those items. So certainly the fact that more and more people are living in sectional title properties, the fact that people have rushed lifestyles, the fact that people have sedentary lifestyles, let's say, and are playing more video games, these absolutely tell us about the evolving habits of South Africans.
Now, when it comes to re-weighting this, you do it every, I think, 5 years. The last time you did it was 2011, 2012. When was it?
It was end of 2012. We implemented it in 2013, so that was 4 years ago.
Right. I mean, you're looking to do it as frequently as possible, because the rate of change is quite considerable in terms of the way in which life changes. A cynic might suggest, and you know I'm going to ask you this question, Patrick Kelly, because we've done it before, that re-weighting is a chance to manipulate the inflation rate.
Yeah, absolutely. Bruce, I sit at home with a glass of wine and I roll a dice and see what weights we're going to
attribute
to things.
I knew it.
Look, the weights of the CPI are based, first of all, on a living condition survey or expenditure survey, where spending habits of South Africans, about 25,000 households across the country, are surveyed over a 12-month period. We make adjustments to those figures with, let's call it, supply-side data. So some of our own surveys of the retail industry, data from regulators, and some of the retail chains themselves, to really try and get the most precise assessment and estimate of the proportions of retail and household spending in the country. And then we convert those values down to percentages to really get the weights clear.
All right, but does the change of including chewing gum and pears, for example, to get separate listings, will it affect next month's inflation rate?
No, I don't think that will significantly affect next month's inflation rate. So, for example, chewing gum is part of the sweets category. You know, sweets is part of food. So it's all these small ones that add up, and obviously the smaller the weight, the less likely it is that it's going to have a direct impact. But let's look at the bigger changes in the weights. We've seen food increase its weight by almost 2 percentage points, from 15.4 to 17.2. Fuel, on the other hand, has dropped from 5.7 to 4.6. So that's almost a 2 percentage point swing for both of them. And on a month-to-month basis, food and fuel prices are the ones that drive the change in the inflation rate. So depending on how prices move in each of those categories, that will have an overall impact on the CPI.
There we go. The man who decides, with a lot of help, I'm sure, Patrick Kelly, head of price statistics at Statistics South Africa. It's the science, really, of how you construct the basket of goods that determines what the inflation rate is. And we've seen inflation begin to get a little bit out of control in recent months, and the Reserve Bank is keeping its head about it. Food inflation is a big component of this. 12% food inflation last year, and it's going to make up an even bigger part of the basket. So provided the rain continues, provided we see food prices start to come down, then we should see the overall inflation rate come down as well. But I'm worried about petrol. It is going up by 29 cents a litre at midnight on Tuesday night, Tuesday into Wednesday. And we will see further increases in the next couple of months as the finance minister announces the budget, and he will add to the fuel price tax, the fuel levy, because that's what finance ministers do as an efficient way of raising money. But it is interesting how our lifestyles are changing to the point where things like stamps no longer go into the inflation basket. Tennis balls? Nah, they're not worth putting in there. And then, of course, recordable CDs. I never managed to get those blooming things to work anyway. So I'm glad they're no longer in the inflation basket. But the numbers from Stats SA did reveal today, and the dark side of the story and the stark reality of the story, is South Africa's economic divide along racial lines. On average, black South Africans earn 20% of what their white counterparts earn. Average household income for white families, nearly 445,000 rand a year. It's less than 93,000 rand on average for black families. If you earn more than 138,168 rand, you earn more than the average wage in South Africa. Obviously, if you earn less than that, you earn less than the average wage. But the average wage is just over 138,000. But for white families, average income, 445,000. For black families, 93,000. That's the inequality gap that everyone's talking about.
The Money Show.
The markets.
Gary McNamara from Sunland Private. Well, the big slowdown in U.S. economic growth last quarter, does it make life impossible for Janet Yellen as 2017 unfolds before?
Bruce, I think it makes her life more interesting, especially with her colleague, Mr. Trump, doing what he wants to do at the moment. And he's certainly practicing what he preaches. But the GDP number that came in was certainly a lot lower than expected, 1.9% for the fourth quarter, with expectations of about 2.2. So it was lower. But bearing in mind, in the third quarter, we had quite a good number on that at 3.5. So you've got a little bit of a base effect. And we've talked a lot about statistics tonight, but you've got to be very careful because they can lie to some degree. But market didn't read it too badly. The American market's holding up, and it's had a reasonably good strong run year to date. So it hasn't read them too negatively.
Reasonably good strong rate. I mean, talking about semantics, it's been a very, very good run. I mean, the Dow Jones Industrial Average breaching 20,000 for the first time ever this week. The S&P 500 hit record levels yesterday. It's having a fantastic time, fueled by enormous and possibly misplaced optimism that Donald Trump's policies are going to make lots of money for investors in the market.
Absolutely. The so-called reflation trade, which everybody's talking about, where previously you're more conservative or defensive businesses were benefiting from lower interest rates. Coming back to Yellen, they're talking more interest rates going up, and that talks to growth and certainly corporate earnings coming through. So the market's expecting corporate earnings coming through over the next year or so, and if they don't, there could be disappointment because the ratings in terms of price earnings or the way we price shares are still quite elevated due to the low interest rates we've had over the last 4 or 5 years.
One company in South Africa that came out with a trading update, there were a bunch, but the one that stole the market attention today was Liberty. It was a shocker of a trading update. Profits are plummeting, outflows are big. Liberty took a big knock on the day.
Bruce, you used the word I was going to use, shocker. It came out quite early in the day, and what you normally find is when these trading updates come out at about a 45% lower number, the market reacts initially to them and they read through the detail and they say, okay, the number, there was a couple of one-offs anomalies, but operationally doing okay, and they come off their lows of the day. Where in Liberty's case, it certainly wasn't the case. There were the one-offs with the unbundling of the 2 Degrees property sector, but operationally a shocker, as you say. persistencies, which is the amount of business that they retain in terms of writing policies, was substantially down, and that's forced them actuarially to reduce their so-called embedded value, or the way that they work out the value of the life company, which is very bad. And that's a continuation from the first half. A couple of once-offs, the African business, they've had some write-offs there, and investment performance also poor. So operationally as well as once-offs, not good. And it's a business that's really been battling for a couple of years now, and from a share price point of view, it's gone nowhere for 3 or 4 years.
That's a problem for Liberty in a market where its rivals have seem to have grown quite nicely. EOH has had a rough start to the year, best performing share for years on in a row, and this year it's had a bit of a bad start. Some criticism for a statement they released this morning, and people said it's more PR than substance, but it seemed to help to stem the flood of selling.
Yeah, Bruce, it's a business that's done very well, and it's a business that's really been driven by acquisitions, and they've bedded those businesses down very well, and they've added to their ability to offer IT infrastructure and support, etc. The problem you've got with EOH, and as you say, it's been a great performer on the market for a long period of time, that base effect, as you start adding more and more businesses, your marginal acquisition becomes less and less relevant. And their last set of results, the like-on-like earnings, if you want, were only up 10%, and it trades on quite a hefty multiple. I don't have it in front of me, but probably 25-30%, 25-30 PE. So when you're delivering like on like growth of 10%, it is certainly overvalued, and I think the market's just probably taking some of the strength that they've had over the last 4 or 5 years off the table at the moment.
And then Comair, it came out with a great trading update in December. Today it's reinforced that trading update, and the market just loves Comair all of a sudden. It was plumbing the depths of despair. Today it was at 4.90, I saw it. And that's largely because during 2016, we just saw an improvement in the rand. That made the oil they buy for the fuel for their jets cheaper, and it made the jets themselves cheaper too.
Well, fuel for the moment with the petrol price coming up, I don't know for how much longer, but you always ask me about airline industries. It's a great trading update, and as you say, a lot of it's the benefit of the rand and the cost of the fuel, but it's always a tough business in my view. It's not one I would invest in, but in terms of operationally and management, I think Comair comes out smelling of roses, and I think they do a great job, and this trading update reflects it, but nonetheless I still think it's a very, very tough industry.
From 3-month highs yesterday, the currency was looking at one stage, there was some speculation, oh, it's going to go through 13, we'll see it in the 12s. And then it didn't. And then it turned around and it ran away from 12 as far as it possibly could. And weakened quite sharply on the day. Much of that due to a fall in commodity prices. Some speculation by Bloomberg and others that if there is a cabinet reshuffle, as the rumor mongers suggest there may be in the not too distant future, that could be negative for us too.
Yeah, Bruce, I think a lot of it's to do with the second bit. Our illustrious leader, I think, has got his nose out of joint about some of the ministers that threatened his authority late last year. And I talk about Derek Hanekom and Motsoaledi on the healthcare side. And I think there was a rumor doing the rounds, or not a rumor, it came out on Bloomberg's that they are looking at a cabinet reshuffle. Nothing confirmed.
Bloomberg was just publishing the rumor and quoting unnamed sources. And these things are very difficult to verify. And Bloomberg are very cautious about what they publish. So when they publish something like that, it's treated as fact. But at this stage, it's still very much rumor and conjecture, simply being reported like that.
Absolutely. And if you look at what we've actually got to sign in, we've got the FICA amendment bill that's still got to be signed, and that's creating a lot of uncertainty. We've got the rating agencies coming back again in June, and they can't keep us at the same rating forever. You know, they can have two levels. They can keep us two calls at the same time. So there's a lot that the government's got to think about, and they don't need these rumors going around that at the very least cause huge uncertainty in the currency, and that's certainly what we saw this afternoon.
Yeah, we know. I've been looking at charts of inflation over the last 40 years, and just looking at the biggest contributor to inflation in South Africa is blowouts in the rand. When the rand has a hissy fit, you see inflation spike up because we just import too much of what we consume. It happens time and time again. And if we mess around with our politics, and that causes investors to panic and take money out of our system, that's going to push up inflation and affect each and every single one of us. Politics, unfortunately, in South Africa has got a disproportionate weighting on the way we live.
Well, the previous speaker spoke about the two big numbers that move the month-on-month inflation is food and petrol, and both of those are very much linked to the rand, the weakness or the strength thereof, and that obviously, as you say, feeds into our inflation basket quite significantly. And we've had a nice time of it, driven by the better commodity prices over the last 6 months, and the market's looking positive. We just don't need this uncertainty coming back to haunt us.
That we don't most certainly need that. Thank you very much. Gary McNamara from Sanlam Private Wealth. Lolo tells me that, did I know, the crushed garlic inflation has shot up 50% now compared to last year's festive season. It's very upsetting as a veggie. I don't know if you... Oh, a vegetarian. Now I understand, Lola. So things like abos and garlic have gone up very, very dramatically. Now, I don't know how much weighting there is in the food basket of garlic, perhaps. And somebody else is suggesting Johan, who says we need mountain bikes in the inflation basket. Now, that's an interesting one because not everybody in South Africa can afford a mountain bike. And certainly if you are somebody who does mountain bike and you buy all the gear and gadgets, you will just pay a lot of money, and you'll pay a lot more money today for a mountain bike than you did 5 years ago. So your personal inflation, Johan, is going to be much higher than the average simply because of the prices going up on these things. But I don't know if we have enough mountain bike sales in South Africa to form part of the average household inflation in this country. It would be interesting. I would love to see an LSM 10 inflation rate. I would love to see an LSM 6 to 9 inflation rate. I would love to see that come through as well. But I just think statistically, that would be a nightmare and very, very expensive. Then we'd have to put that into the inflation basket. And that would be inflationary.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield on Number One News and Talk Station.
The Money Show, brought to you by Old Mutual. Do great things. Welcome to The Money Show on this Friday evening. Coming up on your next Money Show, very excited that for the first time ever, we're going to have the chief executive of a blue chip company in the Make Money Mondays personal edition hot seat. Thabo Tloti, chief executive of Liberty Holdings, will pay us a visit. I haven't looked forward to an insurance salesman's, insurance person's visit in a long time. And then we'll also talk to Ross Latter. He's written a book on how to make money on the stock exchange, The Layperson's Guide to Successful Investing. That's next time on The Money Show.
The Money Show. The
Money Show. Really interesting SMSs coming through this evening on 31702 and 31567. Something I'm going to pick up with Warren Ingram next week as one of the questions, because lots of you are sending questions through, and please keep them coming because they're really good and they do help us inform what we're going to talk about. Says the SMS this evening, my wife and I are close to buying a house. My wife wants to take money out of an investment to pay the bond. Financial advisor advised against this. Is the advisor hunting for commission? It's such a good question because it suggests you don't trust your advisor, which suggests you need a new advisor. So don't be immediately suspicious. There are pros and cons to this. I'm going to get Warren Ingram to discuss the pros and cons on this and any other questions that we get on Thursday next week. I wish he was here now and we could just deal with it quickly. But you say you're close. It's not imminent. So I think you've got a couple of days to mull over this particular challenge, and we will raise it next week on The Money Show. Then Chris says, I've read in Car Magazine that Citroen will no longer be available in South Africa. I wonder where this leaves the owners and dealers. Now, this was a story that did come out in December. And basically what Citroen South Africa has done, it's announced it's got a 5-year plan for the local market, and its focus is going to be rather than on Citroen, it's going to be on Peugeot. They come out of the same family. Citroen's part of Peugeot Citroen South Africa, and they are stopping importing new vehicles. That is true. It says going to honor vehicle warranties, it'll honor service plans of existing customers. But how? It's a bit like trying to sell a Ford Cougar. Or would you buy a secondhand Citroen now with the prospect that, 2 years from now, suddenly it's taking longer for the parts to come in? And I mean, I think people got burned by the Citroen brand during the sanctions era because there were lots of Citroens around. And And suddenly they withdrew from South Africa and people were stuck with these cars and it was a real pain in the neck to service them. They came back to South Africa, all terribly exciting, and now they're being withdrawn once again. The new Peugeots are fantastic. There's nothing wrong with the new Peugeots. They really is. They're beautifully designed. They look like really good cars. But it is disappointing when a brand decides it's no longer going to import new vehicles. It does raise questions around the sustainability of the pricing of those vehicles in a market where over time, and I'm sure they will be true to their word in terms of honoring the service contracts and things. But over time, one has to wonder whether or not they will be able to sustain that promise.
The Money Show on your number one news and talk station.
Time for the best bits of The Money Show. And there's some real concerns around the president's motivation for sending the FICA amendment bill to Parliament, the Financial Intelligence Centre Act amendment bill to Parliament, to review whether or not it's constitutional in that it gives authorities the power to carry out searches without a warrant. South Africa is a globally respected financial sector. It's got a globally respected financial sector and it's long been like that. A delay in signing this bill threatens that status. And the Deputy Chairman of Business Leadership South Africa, Bonang Mohale, this week, speaking to us about why the business organisation is supporting that the Financial Intelligence Center bill should be signed.
Who can be possibly against a bill that is about the prevention of money laundering, white collar crime, corruption, terrorism, and other nefarious financial activities? Especially South Africa, that has been a global leader on these issues, but we now risk becoming a pariah. Firstly, the amendment is critical in the fight against terrorism, white-collar crime, tax evasion, corruption and organized crime. It strengthens South Africa's ability to detect, to discourage and prevent money laundering and the financing of terrorism. It helps us to combat particularly costly forms of corruption to the benefit of all South Africans. This is why South Africa enacted the Financial Intelligence Center Act in 2001. Then joined the Financial Action Task Force, which I refer to as FATF, in 2003. Then ratified the United Nations Convention Against Corruption in 2004. And very recently, we committed to implement the G20's high-level principles on beneficial ownership transparency. You see, Bruce, through these actions, South Africa has created a valuable and much-deserved reputation for taking seriously the combating of money laundering and the financing of terrorism. We do not want our country to become known as a soft target for criminals.
Bonang Mohale, outspoken Deputy Chairman of Business Leadership South Africa. I love the shapeshifter discussions that we have, and lots of you lapped up the life lessons of the Chief Executive at Robosis, Sisa Ngebulana. He was this week's shapeshifter. I asked him if in his career he'd ever made a mistake while building his business.
Yeah, I've been in trouble a couple of times. I think, look, I mean, it's a nature.
Define trouble.
It's a nature of things. I think generally when I think you find it's a lot of entrepreneurs, I think you're a risk taker as an entrepreneur. It just depends to what extent you are able to use your experience and use your background in terms of being more, you know, I always say to people, education is very important and exposure in life is very important because you tend to take measured risks, you know, generally, more particularly when your business grows to scale and you're able to access more credit lines and that sort of thing. So, you know, I've had to close some companies in my life. I think with the residential, I mentioned to you that I've lost some money on some of the homes. I've my first cluster development in Bryanston of 21 homes, I actually lost a lot of money out of it. My first big shopping center, in fact, is the second largest shopping center development that I did, Hemingway's Mall in East London, I lost a lot of money, a couple of hundred millions. And, you know, it almost sunk my business. And I battled for a while because I opened it just after the global recession. And I had massive hole in terms of servicing my loans and that sort of thing, taking borrowing from Peter to, you know, patch up. So it was quite a hard time for me. I've had many of those instances. And, you know, sometimes you think you learn from the lessons and they just come again, disguised in different forms.
That's why entrepreneurs are different from the rest of us. Yeah, I built Hemingway's Mall. I lost some money. I lost a lot of money. I lost a couple of hundred million. What? It's like I lost a couple of hundred million. Made it back again. It's fine. Sisa Ngebulana this week. Great shapeshifter discussion. Your calls are important to us. Your calls are important to us because we learn a lot from your calls. You give us great insights from what you learn in your daily lives. We were chatting this week about the dodgy offers that you will make guaranteed money if you trade currencies online. And I'm hyper-skeptical about the miracle stories that are touted online as fact. And it turns out I'm not the only one. Sihle this week gave us a shout. He phoned us about his concerns over certain investing ads on places like Facebook.
I came across a company online that is offering 40% return per month on investment, and they say it's guaranteed. They're soliciting investors, and they say a minimum of 1,000 rand investment. They're going to trade Forex for you, and they guarantee a 40% return per month.
Can I suggest that I don't believe them for a second, Sihle? I'm being polite, I think. I wouldn't go anywhere near it. I think far too many people, Sihle, fall for it. Have you tried it?
Bruce, I'm a trader myself. I've got some back office broker experience. I've worked for a broker. I've worked for a company that trained people how to trade. 40% per month is just rubbish. It's unsustainable. There is no way you can sustain that type of trade. There's not trading, that's gambling.
Sihle said so, and he's right. I'm so excited that we're going to have, for the first time, the boss of a blue-chip company come and give us his views on money. Make Money Monday's personal edition guest on Monday's Thabo Dlothi, Chief Executive of Liberty Group. That's going to be brilliant. Our other, of course, guest this week was the Executive Director at Section 27, Mark Hayward. He was in the Make Money Monday's personal edition hot seat. And you know how he feels about people who waste money, people who steal money, people who squander public money. It makes him very cross. That's why he's an interesting guy when it comes to talking money.
Inequality has become the buzzword of the 21st century. It's clearly the big issue of 2017. The worry is there's a lot of talk about inequality. What I don't hear is what we're going to do about inequality. And what I also don't hear is that much introspection by people who either control large amounts of money that could start to ameliorate inequality, or even a deeper introspection amongst people who are highly paid or even middle-class people, and I'd call myself a middle-class person and you a middle-class person, about our comparatively high wages, our comparatively high earning ability, and, you know, how we locate that in relation to society, what we should be doing. You know, I've never chased money myself. I've never really been interested in earning money. If I'm comfortable, if I can do my work as a human rights activist, if I can raise money to do this work, I'm happy. But I think what this discussion about inequality raises is that there's a need in society now for a change of culture somehow about how we understand money. I think people like you and me and comfortably off people need to think less about self-interest and more about social interest.
Really interesting guests this week. Well done, Cecile. Well done, Tikiso. They're the producers of the show. They're the brains of the show. And they pulled together a great money show this week. And those are just some of the highlights. Keep them coming, producers. And I look forward to next week already.
The Money Show.
The Biz Quiz.
Time for the Brutal Biz Quiz this Friday night. You play and you will tell you that you're a genius if you are the whiz of the Brutal Biz Quiz this Friday evening. What do the letters MPC stand for? And don't say Michael Parkinson's car, because that would be wrong. The MPC does stand for Michael Parkinson's car, but that's not what we're looking for. It's got to do with inflation. MPC, what do the letters stand for? Most commonly known as MPC. Plus, we'll play more questions this evening on the Brutal Biz Quiz.
The Money Show.
The Biz Quiz.
Let's play the Biz Quiz this evening. The letters MPC. Mike, Papa, Charlie, David, what do they stand for?
That's Monetary Policy Committee.
Oh, one out of one. One out of one. Good start. Good start. Interest rates kept on hold this week. I'm watching the petrol price and I'm a little bit nervous. What do we call raising money through websites like Indiegogo and Kickstarter? If you raise money through that, it's called what?
Crowdfunding.
Crowdfunding. Don't sound uncertain. Don't sound uncertain. Two out of two is very good. I spoke to the technologist Simon Dingle this week in our Money Show FAQ feature about how to use crowdfunding. Which is the second oldest U.S. market index? The oldest one is the Dow Jones Transportation Average. What is the second oldest one? It's better known.
Is it the S&P 500?
Oh, David. No, it's not, I'm afraid. The oldest one is the Dow Jones Industrial... rewind, I didn't say that. The oldest one is the Dow Jones Transportation Average, which is... the which is the second oldest U.S. index, Alan?
Is it the Nasdaq?
It's not the Nasdaq. No, it's far more obvious. It's far more obvious than that. 011-883-0702, 021-446-0567. If you want to play the not so brutal biz quiz this evening, the second oldest U.S. stock market index after the Dow Jones Transportation Average. What is it?
Hi, it's the Dow Jones Industrial Average.
Joe, you got one out of one now. Well done. It is the Dow Jones Industrial Average. The Dow hit a record of 20,000 this week, and we saw the S&P 500 go through 2,300 for the first time this week as well. Well done, Joe. Your next question. Which country's leader now is the most followed worldwide on social media since Barack Obama exited the White House? He's a BRICS member.
The leader of Mexico.
Mexico's not part of BRICS, Joe.
Oh, sorry.
Don't apologize, Joe. Have another go, Joe, because I'm in a good mood.
Well, Putin.
I'm afraid not, Joe. I don't know. Is Vladimir Putin on Twitter? I don't know. On social media. Byron.
It's the leader of China, isn't it?
I don't think so, Byron. I mean, he has lots of potential followers. But no, the Xi Jinping, I don't think, is on social media. Certainly Donald Trump is on social media, and certainly the Mexican president's on social media, and the former Mexican president, who said a very rude word to Donald Trump on social media yesterday, was very fun to watch. I wonder if anyone's going to get it. Let's pause for a moment. Allow you to reflect and think.
The Money Show.
The Biz Quiz.
I can't go to the weekend without a Wizard of the Biz Quiz. Hersha, who is the most followed world leader on social media?
It's Narendra Modi from India.
Absolutely right, Hersha. Well done. He's got the most followers on Twitter, Facebook, Google+, LinkedIn, Instagram, and YouTube. Donald Trump, however, is doing his very best to drum up as many followers as he possibly can. The former UK Prime Minister David Cameron, and the Mayor of London, Boris Johnson, and Johnny Broomberg from Discovery all went to Oxford University. And they were stablemates of which local activist and shapeshifter this week? Oh, Hersha, you're not going to get it. And I don't have a prize to give you anyway, so we don't have a Wizard of the Biz quiz. I feel terrible. I feel dirty. I feel robbed, and I feel like you've been robbed. The answer is Mark Haywood. Here's Mark Haywood, nicest man in the world, not fixated about money, and he's at university with David Cameron and Boris Johnson and Johnny Broomberg. All of these guys at Oxford University at about the same sort of time.